We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. I just want to say right now, right up front, all of you, stop tweeting me. Stop sending me emails. Michael McNamara is back. So please, he's here. You can just listen to him talk. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Hey, good. Happy New Year. How's everything? You've a lot of interesting stuff this last month or so. Came right back for probably the most interesting game of the year to watch. Omer Sheik helped send a game to overtime in the wrong way. So happy to be back.
Yep. So the Pelicans, since our last podcast, or actually since my last podcast, went exactly 2-1, which is pretty nice. And they're now stand at 17-16. The Washington game is rolling up tomorrow. And after that, there's one tough game against Memphis and things seem to let up a little bit. So, Michael, are you feeling like the team is well positioned to make a leap head, or have you been watching this team for the last 2 months and you just don't feel it? You don't think they're going to be able to just suddenly have like a little burst?
Yeah. And I guess there's two things here and they might kind of go, you know, become one, but to me, there's two things I'm looking for. One, does the team actually improve over these next couple months? And two, does this team put themselves in position to, you know, to be in the playoff hunt? And I mean, those things could both be answered the same, but I could see scenarios in which they're not. I could see the Pelicans playing very similar basketball, but winning a lot more because the opponents are a lot easier. So for me, as I've said all along, the number one priority is to see growth and improvement throughout the season. And if wins come with that and playoffs come with that, cool. But, you know, the schedule is easing up, but I'm not going to just judge this team by wins and losses. I really want to see continued improvement. And I don't know if I have so far. I mean, I guess my question to you would be, what can you say has definitely improved about this team from what we saw, let's say, the first week of the season? Where do you think this team has grown?
I would absolutely say that I think they are more comfortable with each other on the offensive end. I have seen more passes in the past 2 to 3 weeks on guys who just know what the other guy's going to do. Like we saw a couple of them in Houston where Tyreek Evans would cut back door and they'd find him. And I don't remember that happening a whole lot earlier in the season. I remember set plays, but I don't remember them just knowing, oh, in this case, this guy's going to cut here or that guy's going to move there. And it feels like some of these starters who really haven't gotten to play very much together over the last, you know, year, year and a half because of injuries are starting to click a little bit, which on one hand, I 100% believe that having Eric Gordon back on the team will make it a better team. But that this worries me as well. So if they're starting to click a little bit and figure each other out, do you want to insert him back in there right away? And will that mess anything up? I know we don't want to talk about Eric Gordon quite yet, but I mean, that's the one thing I've seen. The defense is still abysmal. I can't say anybody on this team has great defense other than Drew's on-ball defense and Ashiq when he drops back to the rim. And everywhere else, it just feels like it's always confused. People are always making bad rotations. Guards are being beat off the dribble all the time. So the defense is a wreck, and it shows in the numbers.
Yeah, and I think there has been a little bit of a mirage lately. The defense over the last 8 games has only been given up about 97 points per game, and you know, it's looking a little better on the surface, but I really dug into the numbers, and it seems like the only thing that's kind of changed is opponents are shooting a far lower three-point percentage. They're shooting about 29-30% in that span. So, and a lot of them, according to the NBA.com stats, are been, you know, not exactly tightly contested. So it looks like we're playing about the same defense, but we've had teams miss some open shots against us. And I think we saw that this week. Phoenix hit some tough shots against us, but I think they missed some wide open ones, and Houston did for sure. They were all out of sorts. So I agree. I don't know where I've really seen growth on the defensive end. It seems like some nights we just tend to get a little lucky and teams are missing open shots against us.
Yeah. And, you know, the offense, like, I think it's pretty funny. Anybody who reads our blog or reads any of the forums, people spend so much time ripping apart this team's offense and how Monty runs this offense and how bad Tyreek Evans can be at times and stuff. And we really need to get away from that. This team has been top 10, except for, I think, like maybe 2 games where they fell out of it. Top 10 offense in the league all year round. They are good at scoring. They're not great, but they're good at scoring. Yeah. And it's all defensive. This team just can't get stops when it counts.
Yeah, but I mean, I do see the frustration because even though we are a team that scores you know, fairly well. Well, not fairly well. You're right. We are top 10. I do feel like, I mean, how often does this team feel like they hit a tough shot or really run something that, you know, whether it goes in or not, you feel good about in the last 5 minutes? It feels like, you know, we'll have an example this week of Tyreek playing hero ball against Phoenix and it goes in. He plays hero ball against San Antonio and it doesn't. And, you know, obviously people are happy with Tyreek after the Phoenix game and upset after the San Antonio game. But in reality, it's the same exact action. It just, you know, has 2 different results that are kind of random. But I think that's the thing that I could see the frustration with fans is, you know, you feel like this team could score for 3.5 quarters, and then when it really comes down to it, the last 5 minutes of games, which is what's going to matter when you're playing against other good teams, I just never feel like I have confidence, you know, in the offense in a given possession.
Yeah, I will say that the hero ball is becoming a little more and more irritating at the end of games to me. I will also say that my feeling, especially like a game like against Chicago, a couple of these games that have been coming down to the wire against San Antonio, it goes back and forth. it just feels like those other teams will be able to stop you from scoring 5 out of 10 times, which isn't great, but they're going to be able to stop New Orleans 5 out of 10 times, and New Orleans is going to be able to stop you 7 or 8 times. I mean, sorry, 2 or 3 times out of 10. So it just feels like we're always we're trading buckets, but we're missing a bucket here and there, and that makes you lose. So I don't know. Hopefully, when the schedule lightens up, I did mention to I don't know if you caught it to Nick during our podcast that up until that point they had played exactly 6 teams that were in the bottom 10 offensively in the league. So that may have something to do with it when you run a gauntlet of the upper half of the offenses, your defense is going to probably tend to look a little worse. But, you know, I'm not expecting huge improvements. So I don't know. So where does that sit? Like, if your defense is really bad, if today we swoop in, we say, Monty, don't you love Chicago? And suddenly he's coach of Chicago, and Tom Thibodeau appears in New Orleans and he takes over the New Orleans Pelicans and installs his defensive system. Does the defense suddenly become respectable?
I mean, not with this current unit. I think it was kind of respectable with Eric Gordon, but right now, you know, and especially before Cunningham got here, you look at giving those minutes to Babbitt and Jimmer and John Solomons, and you know, at some point the dam is just going to break. I think when you have Tyreek playing bad off-ball defense, but almost everybody else on the court is passable or good defensively, you know, same goes with Ryan Anderson. When you have one or two of those guys on the court tops, I think you could get by. I think the Gordon injury, you know, not that he was great defensively by any means, but the people that are replacing his minutes, it was just kind of the tipping point that turned this team from respectable to atrocious. And I don't think even somebody like Thibodeau could fix that. I think it's just kind of a personnel thing at this point. And hopefully with getting Eric Gordon back, this team could get to the middle of the pack, which, you know, I think could be enough, especially when you look at this stretch. I mean, we keep kind of talking around it, but the next 20 games between now and All-Star break, I see us as underdogs in 2 of them. So I'm not saying that we should go 18-2. I'm just saying there's 2 games out of the next 20 that you should go into probably not expecting a Pelicans win. Any of the other ones are totally up for grabs, or the Pels will be pretty heavy favorite. So this is the time now to, you know, for this team to kind of pull away and have the stretch that could put them in this playoff picture as Oklahoma City continues to get healthy.
So let's just play the game then. In those 20 games, what record do you think that they have to put together to give them a fighting chance to hit the playoffs?
If they are 12-8 or worse, I would say you could essentially eliminate them from the playoffs. I think you need a minimum of 13-7, and I would be shooting for 15-5.
Okay.
So we'll know. I think we'll have a pretty good idea by All-Star break.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, you take a look, and the tough teams that do crop up during the schedule during this time, there is Memphis, you got a Los Angeles Clippers game, you got a Dallas, and you got Oklahoma City. All of those are at home. The only road ones, there's a road game in Toronto. I'm assuming that's one of the ones you thought we were being underdog, and a road game in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, those are the two.
So you think we would be that people would actually be giving us points against Dallas
or
Memphis?
Or it would be a virtual toss-up.
Okay.
It would be something where it's an either-or game, or we're a favorite in 18 out of the 20. So
I don't know. We're going to be in Detroit on the 14th, and they don't have Josh Smith anymore.
I know. We need to get them Rudy Gay or somebody just for that one game. Because yeah, that team is 5-0 now, and it's not just Josh Smith. It's obviously, you know, Jody Meeks coming back and giving them the team that they originally wanted to have this summer. But yeah, that's no longer a gimme like it seemed it would be about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, let's use that segue really quick to talk about Houston's game on Friday. In my preview, I said that Josh Smith is going to be replacing minutes that were formerly going to Tariq Black, who is, you know, they waived, and minutes that were going to Donatas Matagiounas, who, if you look at his numbers, he's pretty average. He's a nice stretch four, but he doesn't really do anything else. And that wouldn't be any worse than a wash. Like, Josh Smith looked absolutely awful in that game. Like, you can even, like, if you throw out, like, the two garbage time buckets that he got at the end of that game, I have rarely seen a forward play that awful over that many minutes. I mean, the guy was terrible. I was completely floored by how bad he was. He used to be a guy I liked.
Yeah, and it's not only when the ball is in his hands that he's terrible, but there's just an effect. Like, anybody who's ever played pickup basketball, you know when you have one of those personalities or one of those types of players on your team that you know every two or three times down the court, you got to at least get them the ball because you don't want to deal with them if you don't. And, you know, when you already have Harden and you already have Dwight, like, a guy like Matagiounas, even though his numbers don't pop at you, the fact that you don't have to get him the ball, you could go 10 possessions without getting him the ball and, you know, he'll be all right and he's not going to, you know, rock the boat at all. Like, there's just so many little things that I think it was no coincidence that they moved Josh Smith back to the bench the next night against Miami and they blew him out. Somebody asked me, would I rather have Josh Smith or Dante Cunningham? Same exact situation, salary, whatever. And I would honestly take Dante Cunningham for this Pelicans team, even though Josh Smith is obviously the far superior, more talented, better athlete, et cetera, et cetera. I would honestly take Dante Cunningham over Josh Smith for the rest of the year for this Pelicans team.
Yeah. So here is the one great shame of the Josh Smith saga that happened this year, that he didn't end up in Sacramento. Like, that would have been so. Have you seen the clip that of DeMarcus Cousins taking an entire playoff?
No.
So you got to go find this clip. This is like one of the best clips. Anybody, grab Google, find this clip. DeMarcus Cousins. The other team, I don't remember who they're playing. It was against Timberwolves. The game is 99-98, so it's still in doubt. And the Timberwolves miss a shot on the one end. DeMarcus's team gets the ball, and he literally trudges up the floor. He's not jogging. He's not walking. He is trudging like he doesn't want to be there. His shoulders are slumped. He's got a sour look on his face. And he walks up. They call a play. They kind of have to run around him as he crosses the three-point line because he's moving slowly. He gets to the elbow. He puts his hands on his knees, and he stands there and doesn't move. And a shot goes up. There's a scrum around the basket. The ball gets loose. A guy steals it. It hits the ground. Guys are fighting for it. He stands 7 feet away from this fight, going for the ball, does not move at all as they fight for the rebound. And then the other team gets it, and he straightens up and half jogs back the other way. I'm completely floored. I've never seen anything like this. And just put him with Josh Smith. That would be the most comical team ever.
Yeah, Tyrone Corbin, crazy owner. Yeah. It should have happened. It's too bad that it didn't. Hey, there's always free agency next summer.
I feel so bad for their rookie from last year. What's his name? Oh, I'm having a mind blank.
McLemore?
McLemore? Like, the guy's actually showing something a little bit this year, but he's that is such a crappy situation.
So let me ask you about that Houston game. I mean, so I'll tell you my situation with it. I was actually at the Utah Atlanta game that night. I was scouting Damari Carroll for this summer, trying to put in a good word. So
you still love him.
Yeah, I mean, he's atop my list, my wife's favorite player. So obviously we're both on board with Carroll to New Orleans. But so I'm there at the game, and I tried all night. I didn't bring my phone in with me. I tried all night not to see the score so I could come home later and watch it. And I look up, and it was like 99-70 or something. And I couldn't believe my eyes. I actually thought it was wrong, and I waited for it to scroll around again. I thought it was wrong because in the Utah arena, they actually had us listed as NOH. And I'm trying to figure out what the H is because I could have swore we're the Pelicans. But
right.
Anyway, so I didn't think it was right. And then I'm like, oh, I already saw the score now. So I followed it the rest of the way and saw the final score. I go home and I watch the game, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, man, we're playing pretty bad. You know, of course, this is going to pick up at some point. And then I find myself still saying that at the end of the first. And then Rhino comes in and he hits some shots that are, I wouldn't say miracle shots, but they weren't easy shots by any means.
They weren't good shots.
Yeah, and this whole time I'm like, when am I going to see, you know, because I'm expecting a huge blowout against Houston that New Orleans played really well. I personally didn't feel that way. Now, you watching the game, if I were to say the reason for the Pelicans' blowout victory, how much would you put on the fact that the Pelicans played well or excellent, and how much on it would be that Houston just played terrible?
I would actually, if you go back and read my my review of the game, I tried to make it pretty clear. I felt that Houston did not try. Like, I'm shocked because teams that come in with a top five defense, I feel like those are teams that typically just, they work like dogs. And even if you're playing really well and hitting shots, they're going to keep digging. Like, I can't imagine Memphis or Chicago or even the current Golden State Warriors, if they're getting run off the floor and down 10 points for net quarter, they're going to keep digging and fighting and working hard. And it felt like this Houston team, Dwight Howard, I felt like he didn't care if he was on the floor or not. And, you know, Patrick Beverley was not I was anticipating, I was salivating. I'm like, Drew Holiday is doing really well with turnovers. And last year we saw Beverley just take it to him a couple of times, and he just tore him apart on his ball handling. And Beverley didn't seem to pressure Drew like more than 2 minutes the entire game. And I just felt like the Houston Rockets didn't really give a crap. And apparently Kevin McHale felt the same way because he yanked everybody in the starting five a minute and a half into the third quarter, and only Harden saw the floor again after that point.
Yeah, I felt about midway through the second quarter they had practically given up. And then, yeah, right at the beginning of the third they had just thrown in, which – you know, whatever. I'm not trying to take things away from the Pelicans. I guess when I saw that score in the arena, I was hoping that I would go home and watch a team that, bam, now finally everything clicked. And this was going to be the start of this ascension to, you know, I think we all had a ceiling in our mind for how this Pelicans team could play this year. And, you know, I guess I was hoping to go home and watch the game, and I'd be like, all right, they finally figured it out. Here we go. Here's the beginning of a, you know, 12 out of 14 game winning streak, and this team is finally putting it together. But I guess I didn't feel that way at all watching the game. I felt like it was relatively the same team with a couple of things. I thought they had a couple interesting plays where they made a Sheik kind of a playmaker out of the high post. Mm-hmm. That works pretty well. I feel like Jimmer, you know, was starting to get some kind of confidence and you know, the feeling of having a real role, which is kind of ironic now because it might be taken away from him. But I felt like those were the only two real different. I feel like Tyreek was getting to the basket and just making some of the layups he usually misses. Ryan Anderson making some of the tough shots he's been missing at times this season. You know, I didn't feel like there was much different about this team. And I still think that there's going to be another game in which things click. I don't think this was the game where it all clicked.
Yeah. I will say that there's three things I walked away from that really made me happy about the game. And you're right. The rest of it was just like, it was kind of the same old Pelicans, except, I mean, that Davis wasn't going off. I mean, I loved Jrue Holiday on James Harden in this game. Like, he was giving Harden fits. I thought it was beautiful. I really enjoyed every moment of it. I loved Omer Asik just taking Dwight Howard to the rim twice and dunking.
Yeah.
Just fantastic. And then just Jimmer and his nose for the ball. Like, he, in the previous two games, again, defensively, if he goes up against a quick guard one-on-one, he's going to get torched. But he does seem to have an idea of where the ball's going to be. He's got, we've said many times that I felt like this team doesn't have a lot of high IQ basketball players. I feel like Jimmer Fredette is actually a fairly high IQ basketball player. Like, he knows what position he should be in to at least give him a chance to have a good play. And, you know, I think that's good.
Yeah. I mean, kind of talking about the games as high as you could be in that game. I mean, it's probably only because of how low you were probably feeling after the game before. I mean, what was your, let me start here. Do you really enjoy those games, the close white knuckle games, or do you just want them to get over with and know the results one way or the other? I mean, how much do you enjoy a game like that San Antonio game?
It depends on what it was. So the San Antonio game, no, I didn't enjoy that one. And that's because so much of that game was just a struggle. Like, the first half of that game was abysmal to watch. They were missing shots that they should have been making. It was dumb errors. It was a hard first half to watch. We had 28 points after two quarters, and the rest of it was a lot freer and better. But after such a slog, when you get to the end of it, you're just like, please let it be over, please let it be over. And you get a moment of the Anthony Davis cleanup dunk, and you're just like, yes, I got this moment, now finish. But it didn't, and I feel like the same way. Like, I can remember last year when they had that triple, I think it was triple or maybe double or triple overtime game in Chicago, where it just felt like you were beat up after that game. Now, there have been games where both teams are like on fire, and I can enjoy those. I remember the one where Peja hit a three to finish the game a bunch of years back, and it was in Phoenix and back and forth and fun as hell to watch. Those I enjoy, even if they are back and forth at the end. But slugfests where you're just kind of like, these guys should have played so much better here and here. No, I don't get super excited. I my stomach kind of hurts by the end of them.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I would say 98% of comments after that game were either about Tyreek's hero ball late, or the Asik, you know, tip in. I didn't read one comment about the fact that this team scored 28 points in the first half. Like, people act like you could only lose games at the end of games. Good God. I mean,
it was awful.
There's a lot wrong here. It's not as simple as Monty should have called the timeout or not, or Tyreek needs to pass that to Davis. If your team scores 28 points in the first half, and not against a defensive juggernaut by any mean, especially with Kawhi Leonard out, there are issues with this team that go beyond whether Tyreek should have taken that last shot or Monty should have called the timeout, or, you know, how could Asik possibly do that? those are small little things in a big picture of a game in which, you know, yeah, it would have made us 3-0 against the Spurs, but who cares? What does the other two games matter? Quite frankly, we had the Spurs minus, you know, two of their top three players, I believe on the second night of a back-to-back, too, for an older team. So, I don't know. I think there's a lot more wrong here than, you know, should we spend 15 minutes right now dissecting whether Monty should have called the timeout or what Tyreek should have done on that last play. I mean, this was a really ugly game in which the Pelicans played good for just long enough to be able to even get the game into overtime, but a lot yep. that needs to be cleaned up here.
Yeah, I mean, 10 of 36 for Tyreek and Drew in that game. I mean, all they had to do was go 11 of 36, which isn't asking a lot. And the game does. I mean, Tyreek Evans took 6 3-pointers in the game.
Yeah.
That shouldn't happen. So, that, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff going on in this game. And, I will say the one thing I thought turned the game, I felt we still had a pretty good chance to pull this out in overtime. And then Drew picked up a 6th foul.
Right.
And that was it.
Yeah.
Like, Drew was the only guy who had any chance of slowing down Manu. And it was basically, he was on Marco in the first half, and Marco couldn't score to save his life. And then he shifted to Manu in the second half, and Manu got slowed down dramatically until Drew was put into foul trouble and got pulled. So it was like, whoever Drew gets thrown on, they're not going to have a good time at all out there. But as soon as he went to the bench, it was pretty much over.
Yeah, I felt the same way. And, you know, then again, Anthony Davis hits that free throw,
mm-hmm.
and he puts us up by 2, then worst case scenario, you know, we have the ball with the last shot in the first overtime to either win it or second into a second overtime, you know, obviously.
Yep. It was a 2-point game. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of interesting things there. I think the things that, you know, people kind of talk about, I you know, should Monty have taken a timeout there? I think we've seen this as a pretty consistent strategy of his, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, that's your call. But I think he sees that if the other team does not have their optimal starters or optimal defensive players on the court, he's going to trust his players and not call a timeout there, not allow the defense to get set and not allow them to put in their, you know, their optimal defensive guys. And, you know, Tyreek and Anthony Davis had just did something very similar in the Phoenix game and in, heck, at the end of regulation in the San Antonio game, on a play that you thought had essentially won the game. Tyreek just chooses to shoot a step back 3 here, and we could get into a ton of issues about Tyreek, or, you know, if Monty has enough control over him. But again, if you're really going to focus on just that, I think you're missing the big picture with this game and a lot of other things that should be concerning you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll say this about, like, I want to complain about the hero ball, and I think part of what bothers me is they're actually semi-trying to go into a 2-man game with Tyreek and Davis, which I think could actually be really devastating. But it also feels like Davis runs out to set the pick, Tyreek fakes like he's going to use it, then dribbles back out again, and then Davis kind of sits in no man's land, like, should I set another pick? Should I not? Should I? And then Tyreek just decides what to do. And it's never a well-run pick and roll. Like, I really firmly believe if you ran a proper pick and roll where Evans just went and Davis had set the pick properly to begin with and everything goes, that would be a pretty devastating play, but it never seems to really develop fully.
Yeah.
And I mean, what do you say if you're Monty? You can go to them and say, hey, make sure you actually use the pick, but then you're controlling situation that you shouldn't have to control. Like, Tyreek should know when to use a pick and not use a pick. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess my bigger thing is just a roster construction thing overall. And I was really, I was really banging my head to try to think of a championship roster that had it's this specific what I think is weakness built into it of I would say Tyreke Evans and Ryan Anderson are pretty high variance players, right? Like, especially this year. Can you think of a championship roster, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but or even a well-known contender that had two such high variance offensive guys with high usage rates, so not just guys that weren't a big part of your team, but with high usage rates and that were, as you know, in addition, as bad as these two on the defensive end? Like, is it possible to build a championship roster with two of these guys? Or, I mean, I could think of a lot of rosters with one. I can't think of any championship contending rosters with two of them.
Not if you throw the defensive thing in there as well. Like, that's just a killer. I can actually think of teams that have had very high variance offensive players. And multiple, like a lot of people don't remember this because of the legend that's grown up around them. But the Detroit Pistons, they had a lot of high variance. Their three guards, Isaiah Thomas, had games where, you know, people remember him scoring 24 points in a quarter, but he also had games where he scored like six in the playoffs. And then Vinny Johnson was on that team, and he was known as the microwave for a reason. He could get hot really fast, but he also had games where he was really cold, and Dumars had the same thing. So you could go back and find that. But then Isaiah Thomas and Dumars are going to rip your balls off on the defensive end and be happy. They'll probably pick them up and eat them in your face. So no, I mean, I can think of teams that have like offensive failings at times because their guards just aren't necessarily the greatest creators in the world all the time. But not that those guards were also terrible defensively.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the guy who sticks out to me is a guy like John Starks.
Yeah.
John Starks could score 4 points one night on 15 shots, and he could go off for 30 on 16 shots the next night. But he always gave you defense. Hmm. And, I mean, that's the thing with me is – and it's ironic because they're two guys whose games would probably, you know, be extremely efficient together on the offensive end. I mean, a big part of getting Tyreke, I think, you know, and the thinking was to put him on the bench unit with Ryan Anderson, you know, have two super subs. But just when thinking of roster construction, like people talk about all the guards we have and all the this and the fact that we don't have a small forward, yada, 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 I really think that long-term, at least one of those guys either has to get consistent offensively, which I think there is potential for Ryan Anderson, only because he was a much more consistent offensive player in the past than he has been this year. But one of them either has to be more consistent offensively, or become at least an average to above average defender. I don't see either of those things happening, and it's just watching this stretch of games and people wondering why is this team so inconsistent and up and down. I mean, I think that's a huge part of it, and I don't think you could have two high variance offensive players who need the ball at the defensive end. So I think that's one conclusion I kind of have come to long-term about this team, is at least one of them will have to be gone when this team is a true contender.
Yeah, I think it's – I agree with that because mostly the price tag will be too high. I think because they're – you know, if you study contracts and how much people make, it's almost always based on scoring. And so those two guys are going to get paid by somebody just because they can score, and scoring is supposedly the harder thing to do than defense. So Ryan Anderson and Tyreke Evans, neither of them were on crazy contracts, but they're not on cheap contracts either. So it's going to be hard to have essentially like $20 million coming off the bench. And that's the only way this team is going to really be a a championship caliber team with both those guys, they got to have a solid starting five. Those guys can come in and be just dynamite offensively and maybe even play 20 minutes, 24 minutes each between the two of them, like 48 minutes. But you can't. You're right. You'd have to have a whole other lineup, and that's going to be pricey to put together. You got to have somebody better than Luke Babbitt playing small forward.
I mean, now that's just reaching for the stars, but all right. So I know we want to talk about Eric Gordon. That's probably the biggest news coming out, that he's expected to play next week and maybe as early as tomorrow. But
questionable thoughts, for tomorrow's game.
Yeah, thoughts on the Phoenix game. What kind of jumped out to you about this game?
It felt like to me that, again, you could only stop one guy at a time defensively. And that's like something that I just keep coming back to, is like Drew was really good at stopping whoever he's put on. But what always happens is the other guard goes off and then they switch him to that guard and the guard he's guarding goes off then. And I mean, it's just really frustrating to know that that's such a glaring weakness, that you can have a team that has a guy who is essentially, in football terms, your shutdown corner, and your other cornerback is Joe Schmo off the street who weighs 500 pounds. It's like, I mean, it bothers me a lot watching these games.
And yeah, but, I mean, I remember at the end of the game when, I mean, this was 100 to 100 with 2 minutes left. And Phoenix had that three-guard lineup. Like, they closed the game with Isaiah, Dragic, and Bledsoe. And I remember honestly thinking, how in the world are we going to get a stop against this team? I think the play that completely won us the game was that steal by Dante Cunningham, where he just kind of came, you know, blindside and took the pass, you know, in the post to, I think it was from Dragic to Bledsoe, if I'm not mistaken. But either way, I feel like we got that stop there, and I don't really know how else we could have gotten a stop late in this game. I mean, that stop basically won the game for us, but I don't think we could stop a team like that aside from a great play from an individual player or that team just making a bonehead mistake on their own. So, you know, props to Dante Cunningham, and I think he essentially won us that game down the stretch.
Yeah, I will also say, I mean, Phoenix was not stopping the Pelicans either. The Pelicans were scoring pretty easily there. So, again, I was in that situation where I felt like we're trading baskets back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and whoever managed to get those last lucky stops, and I don't think it's going to be the Pelicans, are going to win. But I will also put out that, you know, this was the game where the Pelicans didn't know how to hit a free throw to save their lives. Like, I think Ashik missed 4 free throws to start the game. So it was like 18-29 from the free throw line. It doesn't take a much, you know, hit 75% of it, and suddenly that game had like a different flavor to it later in it.
Yeah, and again, like, this is the thing with Tyreek, is people think he's insane the next night in San Antonio. But as I said, the game was 100-100 with 2 minutes left. And guess who scored the next 8 points for the Pelicans?
Right.
Tyreek Evans. So, I mean, it's, you could see where he has the confidence, and, you know, he offensively pretty much wins that game for us. So I don't know. It's a kind of, it sucks that you've got to be so reliant on one or two guys.
Yep. All right. So let's move on. I think we have one big discussion that we need to talk about. It's Gordon coming back, but it's really like a mixture of three things. Like Gordon coming back is one thing, but there's going to be an inevitable impact to minutes on this team. And it's not going to be impacts to Evans or Ashik or Holiday or Davis, they're all going to get the same minutes. Ryan Anderson's going to get the same amount of minutes. The guys who are definitely going to be impacted by this are Jimmer Fredette, Austin Rivers, Luke Babbitt. Jimmer has had three pretty solid games. Austin Rivers, during those three games, has been eh. And Luke Babbitt has been meh for pretty much every game he's played. So let's put you in the place. You are Monty Williams. And you're just in your mind formulating your game plan. Apportion minutes. Now that Eric Gordon's coming back and getting, say, 28, because he's, you know, you want to work him back in easily. Apportion minutes to Babbitt, Fredette, and Rivers.
So in this stretch, Rivers, Babbitt, Cunningham, and Fredette have been getting about 75. Ever since Salmons left for personal reasons, those four guys have been getting about 75. If you're telling me I'm going to give Gordon 26 to 28, which I agree with, I am taking all 22 from Austin Rivers. Every single minute that he's been getting, he's been averaging about 22 minutes. I'm taking every single one of his minutes, and he is getting a DNP until somebody gets hurt again or, you know, whatever. I'm taking all of his minutes, and then I'm taking two or three from Babbitt, two or three from Cunningham, and those are where Eric Gordon is getting his minutes. Basically, he's filling Rivers' role plus taking a couple of minutes from Cunningham and Babbitt because essentially Tyreek will be playing a little more three. To me, it's that easy. Austin Rivers, in the last 25 games, his numbers, aside from his free throw percentage, are worse than his rookie numbers. That all-time worst season, Austin Rivers, over the last 25, he started off great with those eight games. Over the last 25, his numbers, almost across the board, are worse than the rookie season that people declared one of the worst seasons, if not the worst season, of all time. For me, it's simple. You take every one of his minutes. He is on the trade block, and he is he's a DNP until he is traded or until somebody else gets hurt.
Yeah, and I will mention that the only reason why that free throw percentage is higher than his career average is because of that one game where he hit 11 of 12 right. during garbage.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, I mean, he's been awful. And his numbers this season, if you just take a look at it, are now below his career average. So I agree with that 100%. So that is your decision. That would be my decision as well. Austin Rivers, I'm sorry, you're going to the bench. Now here's the real question. Do you think Monty Williams is going to do that?
No.
Yeah, me either. I think Jimmer is going to the bench. I think that's a shame.
Yeah, and I think he'll do it for defensive purposes. I think he'll say he'll do it because...
But this team is terrible defensively.
Yeah, and his response would be, well, I don't want to even get worse. And, you know, he'll also say that, you know, Austin has more chemistry and played more time together with Eric. And, you know, that theoretically Austin's been getting good shots. He's just been missing them, and it's a slump, and he'll turn it around. But, I mean, you know what maybe I'd be willing to do? I might be willing to let them switch Jimmer, have the minutes on the road, and Austin at home. Cause the really weird thing is Austin hasn't been bad at home. He's actually been slightly above his career numbers on the road in this stretch. He is shooting 28% from the field, 19% from three, and 68% from the line, which is about his norm. Because as you said, his free throw percentage was elevated by that stretch at home. But, I mean, he has been god-awful on the road, like worst player in the NBA type awful on the road. And we're about to hit a big road stretch here. So I don't know how it could be justified at all. I think I don't care who was drafted where. I don't care who's friends with whose father. Austin Rivers should not be playing at all when Eric Gordon returns to the rotation.
Jimmer was drafted 12th, wasn't he?
No, they were both 10th, both Austin.
Were they both? They were both 10th.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, shouldn't even matter.
Yeah, but Jimmer wasn't our 10th, so theoretically we haven't invested as much. But no, I mean, I've rooted for Austin throughout the years. You know, I even wrote a piece saying that Dell should have picked up the option before the season started. I truly believed it. But, you know, I'm not a person who's going to stay with my old beliefs when, you know, new evidence shows me it is what it is. And the fact is that he's not a guy that should be in the rotation. And since he is an expiring contract, I would be on the phone every minute of every day with him in mind and trying to pair him with Salmons to take back more salary. But my number one objective, if I believe that Gordon is back, is trying to flip Austin Rivers either into a competent backup point guard, backup small forward, or backup center. So I don't think he should really play again for the Pelicans unless another injury, you know, comes to pass.
I should I just want to mention this. In that Phoenix Suns game, somehow everybody on the team had positive plus minuses except for Dante Cunningham, who was a minus two, and Austin Rivers, who was a minus 24.
But
I don't even know how that's possible. Like, how can you have Jimmer Fredette plus 13, Babbitt plus 12, everybody else is like plus 4, 5, or 8, and somehow during the 22 minutes Austin Rivers is out there, they were outscored by 24 points.
Oh, but he did catch that alley-oop against a Houston team that wasn't trying, so.
Yeah, that was actually kind of fun.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I would root for him, too. I would hope that a change of scenery could help him. I really think that Monty is the exact type of coach he doesn't need at this point in his career. I think, you know, ideally he would be given free rein on a second unit by some coach where, you know, he wouldn't be so worried about making mistakes. And I really hope he takes off elsewhere, but if I'm Dell, I'm on the phones every minute of every day trying to flip them. My dream realistic trade, I'm not shooting for the stars, but Austin Rivers and John Salmons for Mo Williams. And, you know, I take that.
Where is Mo playing? He's in Timberwolves.
Yeah,
playing, isn't
he plays for Minnesota, so you could see where you know, yeah, it would be all expiring contracts and Minnesota getting a look at a free look at a 22-year-old when they obviously don't need a vet at this point. You know, that's a realistic trade for both teams. And, you know, that's I would be trying to do something like that. But, yeah, I mean, long story short, or I guess I made it long story long, Austin Rivers is not playing for this team if I'm the coach. But you're right. I don't have faith that Monty's going to make the same decision. And who knows, you know, he might be right. And, you know, we'll see. But the objective facts tell me that Austin should not be playing.
Right. Okay, so Eric Gordon started off the season really terribly, was finally getting back into a flow, had a few good games, got the injury. So Gordon, what do you expect from him over like the next month? Do you think he's going to be dealing with that shoulder injury and be missing more games? What do you think is going to happen here?
I mean, it's tough because the number one thing that you find out when talking about this or researching this is that none of these dislocations or torn labrums or whatever are the same. So as Pelicans fans, the one guy we could look at is Jason Smith, and Jason Smith came back for it, played for a while, and then eventually had the surgery. Now, we don't know if that's, you know, because he couldn't play with it anymore or just because the season was essentially over. I think I lean towards the latter, though nobody will I don't think confirm it, but it seems like it's something that you're just in a state that you're slightly more fragile than somebody who has no issues. So I guess the way I'm looking at it is Eric Gordon's coming back. He's going to play. Every game he plays is a bonus. I am not expecting him, you know, to be finishing up the year. I'm just going to, I guess, appreciate every game he does give, but I don't assume that he's a part of this team the rest of the year the way I assume AD is or Drew is or whatever. I think he's kind of on borrowed time.
Yeah. I will say that I will be happy to be able to see a basic curl play from a opposing team small forward where our guard or small forward chasing him isn't half the court length behind. Because it's painful. Like, a guy will just go to get a basic screen on the left wing, run a curl around through the paint and out to the other side, and Babbitt is under the basket when he catches the ball. And, you know, sometimes Austin Rivers is a little bit better, but Jayon Salmons is the same way. Dante Cunningham is usually 6 feet away, 7 feet away. He's not under the basket, but he's not a small forward, and he tries hard, but he's not got the foot speed. It's just, and, you know, that is one thing Gordon has been good at, is at least he can chase guys and make it so they're not catching and getting wide open shots. That'll be nice.
Yeah, I really think that the big benefit here will be on the defensive end. I think people think about offense automatically first and, you know, think about the upgrade from Babbitt, who's, you know, shooting a good percentage but seems a little gun-shy, to Eric Gordon, who has, you know, a more versatile repertoire. This team wasn't terrible defensively when Gordon went down. I mean, they were giving up an even 100 points a game. They were, you know, obviously still had some issues giving up points in the paint and even fouled a little more than they do now, but they were a solid middle of the pack defensive team, you know, when Gordon had gone down. So to me, I'm really hoping for more on that end of the court. I'm hoping that, you know, Gordon is more of a decoy on the other side of the court. Teams don't really respect Babbitt, even though obviously he does shoot a high three-point percentage. They know they could just close out hard and he can't really do anything, or, you know, they know they could play off him because the Pelicans don't really look for him as much. You know, I guess I'm hoping decoy that has the occasional 8-point and 3-minute outburst to kind of give the team a spark on offense, but really – you know, the upgrade that I expect to see is on defense, and then just adding another body, you know,
to the rotation.
Like I said, if he has Austin Rivers' exact same role, you really can't be worse as an NBA player than Austin Rivers. you can't be worse than he has been over the last 25 games. So, you know, I would love to have a guy who plays like a $15 million player, but honestly, pretty much anything that he gives us will be an upgrade. So,
all right. One more game to play with you. We're going to, and I think I know what your answer is going to be, but I'll let you say it anyways, and I won't steal your thunder. We're going to play the game. It's basically, we've had 30 something games now. Basically seen a third of the season. Who, so far, has been your MVND? Because, obviously, Anthony Davis is this team's MVP. Anyone who would argue that is a moron. So, we're looking for most valuable not Davis. MVND. Who's your MVND?
Yeah, I would love to come up with somebody else just to kind of be different or have some kind of argument or debate, but for me it's been Drew Holiday. Like you said, defensively, he's a guy that, you know, can be as dominant on the defensive end as Davis has been in stretches on the offensive end, to where he could just completely frustrate or shut down an opposing team's perimeter player. He could guard everybody from Harden to quick, fast point guards to, you know, even when he gets caught in the post against a big, he usually does a good job or even gets a steal out of it. Just the defensive end, I feel like he's easily been our best player. And on the offensive end, when he's aggressive, he really shifts games, and he's been more consistent than guys like Tyreek and Ryan Anderson. So I think it's Jrue Holiday, and I had trouble coming up with somebody who I could even argue against Jrue Holiday. So for me, it's Jrue Holiday, and it's pretty easy. How about you?
I'm actually going to not go with Jrue Holiday.
Wow.
And I will caveat that by saying I think that if this guy wasn't here, it would be Jrue Holiday in a landslide. Like, there's no way you could say anybody else. I think it's Tyreek Evans. And I think it's because he has taken on that alpha dog role as the offensive spark plug, the guy who has to make something happen when pressure's on. He does it. He's not the best at it, but he's actually pretty solid at it. And the very fact that this is the guy we're going to in crunch time, we're not, you can't really run an Anthony Davis play that easily where he's going to be able to just tear apart another offensive team because he doesn't have all the moves to create his own shots. So this team right now is reliant on Tyreek Evans to generate those shots. And he's doing a good enough job that I think that since he is your primary offensive catalyst, I'm going to have to go with him. Jrue Holiday, I love his defense, but Jrue is kind of passive at the end of games. I would be willing to bet that, say, should Tyreek Evans be shipped out tomorrow and they bring in a small forward who's a shooter who doesn't have a whole lot of on-ball skills, Jrue Holiday would suddenly be getting all of those calls at the end of games to make things happen, and I'd feel differently. But right now, I think Tyreek is just too important in close games to give it to Jrue.
Let me ask you something. Because I really disagree. Let me start off with this question. The Pelicans have played 33 games. I think Tyreek's played in all of them, right? Or did he miss one?
I think he's got all.
No, he missed one game. All right. But whatever. So one game. I don't even remember what game that was, but let's assume we won by the way. It doesn't matter. 33 games. We have Wesley Matthews, who I don't think is going to make an all-star team. I don't think anybody would call him one of the three best shooting guards in the league or whatever. Wesley Matthews is on this team instead of Tyreek Evans. What is our record right now?
I don't think it's that different. At most, I might say it's a couple games better because Matthews we wouldn't have the guards that we couldn't stop because we only have one defensive guard. So I would be willing to say we have 19 wins. Do you disagree with that? You think Wes Matthews is so good defensively and his offense is efficient enough that he's better than Tyreek scoring with Jrue off the ball and having Jrue on the ball and Wes Matthews as the outlet is a major offensive upgrade too?
Yeah, I think a big part of like some of the positives that you said are almost because it has to be that way. Like, you can't really go to Jrue late in the game because teams could just sag so easily off of Tyreek. So then that closes, you know, that hurts that space.
Yeah.
Overall, you know, defensively, obviously, he's not really bringing much to the table and is probably a slight net negative. I probably have an irrational love for Wes Matthews. I mean, I think most people would probably look at him as like a slightly above average player, and I think he's like, he's the apple of my eye. I truly believe if we swap Tyreek for Wes Matthews would be something like 22-11 right now. Yeah, I just think it would be an infinitely different team. So, yeah, I think Tyreek does that role, and sometimes it works out. And I looked at his game log over this year and last year, and he has, like we said, he's this high variance player. And to me, it's like so easy to predict when he's going to have the good game. Like, I'll start doing it on the podcast now, but it's really as simple as when a team is soft in the middle or has no rim protecting presence. Like, I even said it before the Houston game. I tweeted that it would be a big night and would need to be a big night for Tyreek. He was the matchup, you know, it was going to be one of his nights. I wasn't surprised at all. It's so easy to predict when he's going to have a good game. Like, you'll see. I mean, he'll be terrible against Memphis, like, and we're going to have to find some other way to win. It's just, you know, I know he's going to be terrible against Memphis, and he's going to give us nothing or below average on the defensive end. It's just so hard for me to truly value a player like that when at the end of the day, this team is going to have to win 4 out of 7 against a good team. And, oh, by the way, they're going to have to do that in 4 series. I think it's very hard to have a player like that if that is your long-term goal. So I guess I just got to give it to Drew for the all-around stuff.
Okay. All right, so let's take a look at the upcoming week and hit on some highlights really quick. This is the last I would still classify as difficult week. They do have 2 good teams. They're playing at home against Washington. They go on the road to take on Charlotte on Wednesday, and then they're back at home Friday to take on Memphis before they go on a 5-game road trip. So Washington, Charlotte, Memphis, pick a team to talk about really quickly. I'll pick a team to talk about really quickly, and then we'll make our predictions.
Yeah, I got no interest in talking about Charlotte, so I'm going to go with Washington.
Okay.
First one up, it's pretty interesting. They're on a long – well, not a long road trip, but a really hard one. Will actually be their 5th game, their 3rd in 4 nights. They went to Houston, Dallas, OKC, San Antonio. They're on a 3-game losing streak. They actually beat the Rockets by 1 the first part of the road trip. But they're just in a tough place right now, you know, kind of finishing up this road trip. They're not as good of an offensive team as you would think that they are. They're really, you know, they're a solid team defensively. They actually foul quite a bit, but, you know, they contest shots really well. They don't give up good percentages in the 2 key spots, at or around the rim and behind the 3-point line. So they make you work for everything on that end. And, you know, they just kind of, they beat you with smart, savvy play down the end. They're a lot like us last year, in which they barely take any 3-pointers. I think they're like 28th or 29th in the league, but they're 1st in percentage. So when they do take them, it's usually a good shot. So, you know, their record, of course, they're out east. Their record's a little inflated, especially before this recent 3-game losing streak, but they are, you know, they are a solid team. That could really play some defense and then just get clutch play at the end of the game from guys like Wall and Pierce.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing to keep track of, though, is Nene, Bradley Beal, and Drew Gooden are all day-to-day on the injured list right now. So they may or may not play tomorrow. That'll have a pretty big impact. If you look at this team, though, is there one guy who you go, that's my dude I'm scared of?
I mean, Bradley Beal, just because he'll likely be that other guard that we talk about. I mean,
yeah, Drew's going to be on John Wall,
yeah,
no question.
Yeah, Drew will be on John Wall, and now Bradley Beal, who is more than just a 3-point shooter. He could get free, he could get to the basket, he could get to the free throw line. I mean, I know him and Nene are both day-to-day, but they both played Saturday night, so I would expect him to be playing against us. And yeah, if Drew's going to be occupied on Wall, then, you know, you're going to have Tyreek or whoever on Beal from time to time. So he's going to be the guy I'm scared of, and then the ultimate random guy, and it looks like he's coming back down to earth. But, man, Rasul Butler started off the season like,
the Phoenix.
Like he was a freaking MVP candidate. He's come back down to earth a little bit, but he's still shooting 49% from three. Martell Webster isn't playing in second nights of back-to-backs, but he should be playing in this game. They also have Otto Porter, so they kind of have those three small forwards off the bench who, you know, you wouldn't be surprised to see them have one for six stat lines, and you wouldn't be surprised if any one of those three went off. So those are kind of the guys that I'll be having a sneaky eye on.
Okay. Before we make our predictions, I'll move on. I want to talk about Memphis, because you're right. Charlotte's such a sad story. Let's not talk about them. So Memphis this year, they've actually slipped a little defensively, which I think is pretty interesting. They have been the number one, two, or three defense for 5 years running, or 4 years running, I think, now. And they've fallen defensively all the way to 11th. But the opposite side of the coin is this is a team who, over the same 4 years, never placed better than 17th offensively. And this year they are the ninth best offense so far. They're scoring at a very nice clip. And if you take a look at their numbers, there are particularly two reasons. And I bet most people will probably be able to figure this out based on efficiencies. They're getting 17% more free throw attempts than they did last year. And they're getting 13% more free throw was a 17%, 3-point attempt is 13%. So they've basically taken the two most efficient ways to score points, and they're doing them almost 1/5 more often than they used to. Which, I mean, right there, that's going to propel any sort of offense into a pretty nice area. And it is Vince Carter, Courtney Lee being able to stretch the floor very well. Quincy Pondexter's back. He helps a little bit. I mean, it's a team that basically looked at what its roster was, and it filled its holes. And it's kind of difficult to be able to, this is the kind of thing I would love to see the Pelicans be able to do. They have their foundation. They have their, you know, primary three guys. You could say that, you know, if you take Ashik, you take Anthony Davis, you take Jrue Holiday, and you just got to find the cheap wings who fit in. Like, if you take those three guys and you put Courtney Lee and Vince Carter, who are making a combined like $6 million between them, that's a scary team.
Yeah.
And I think the Memphis is the same way. So, and they're not going to be an easy team to take down, even if they are coming. And it is, I mean, for years now, you've not been scared of Memphis at all. Are you, that is my question for you. Are you now scared of Memphis? Are you worried about them?
I mean, I'm probably going to be the last one on this other, on the other boat, but like, I still don't believe in them at all. Like at all. Like I would bet a large amount of money that if they're in the playoffs, which they probably will be just because of such of the hot start, that there's no way they're getting out of the first round. Like, I have no belief in them whatsoever. They're obviously starting to lose games now that Zach Randolph's been hurt, and, you know, I think he'll probably be back for our game. But, I mean, even if you look at expected win-loss, like, they would have expected to lose three more games than they actually have. Maybe it's their style, maybe it's because there's no flash, but that's not usually the type of guy I am or what I care about. I watch this team play, and I watch them eke by these little victories, these fluke victories, and I don't buy it all. I think eventually the wheels are going to somewhat come off, and their hot start will get them into the playoffs. But I think, you know, people are like, we don't want to see them in the first round. I think this will be the team that everybody in the West will want to play in the first round. I think this will be the worst team in the playoffs.
Wow.
Or Houston, maybe Houston. But yeah, I don't believe at all. And all that said, I still think they could very easily beat us because we lay down against physical teams. I mean, look no further than the Indiana game. So all that said, I'm really not a believer in Memphis, but I hate the way we play against physical teams. So I'm not chalking it up as a victory with or without Zach Randolph.
All right. So let's make our predictions. I'll start with Washington. I am calling a win versus Washington. I think the Pelicans take it by 12. What you got?
Yeah, I got a win by 9.
Okay. In Charlotte, I say that the Pelicans, because, by the way, they're missing Al Jefferson now. He's out for almost a whole month, I think. Charlotte, this is just going to be depressing to watch. I would say the Pelicans will beat Charlotte. Since it's in Charlotte's house, I'll say by 7.
Yeah, it's going to say by 8, so same page.
And then Memphis is going to come in to New Orleans, and they're going to pummel the Pelicans by 16.
I say the Pels lose by 4 in a game that all of us will universally say we should have won.
Okay.
Like, just, all right. Yeah, ugly game.
Okay. So, got anything else you want to talk about?
That is it. Good to be back. Good to hear your voice. And looking forward to doing more of these in the future.
Yep. So, thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. And we'll be back next week.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters, the more your network matters, the more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.